All right, I'm here with Guy Odishaw again for round two. He is the co-founder of Cerebral Fit and a neurofeedback practitioner. Guy, welcome to the show, brother.
Great to be back. Looking forward to our time together.
Yeah, man. You know, last time we talked, we really got into just a lot of the different tools and systems that you used and your journey from being a naturopath, but then seeing what you could do with electric medicine, if you will, right, and neurofeedback, and you were getting some just crazy results, so much so that I actually reached out to you after the show. I said, Guy, I need some help. I need some help with my family and my kids, and I think some of the things that I was looking, goal-wise, I was looking to push them into. And then my dad also had macular degeneration, and he said, Joel, I can help with that. I got like 80-plus percent. I forget what your percentages are, but you're like, I get people better from that all the time. And so we've got some updates to talk about and some new science and research. So I'm excited to jump into things with you again, man. This is going to be great.
Absolutely. Where would you like to start? Should we start with you and how things went at home?
Yeah, let's go into some of these things. So, you know, I want to talk, we'll talk about my dad right away too, I think. Well, let's talk about him because I think, so my dad got diagnosed with macular degeneration and, reached out to you, and he's been doing a really multifaceted holistic protocol. We're using microcurrent. He's using red light. There's some Chinese herbs, and there's a whole bunch going into it. And I just talked to him just the other day. I said, "Hey, how's things going?" And I think the way he phrases, like, it's like 2/3 better. Yeah. like pretty darn good, right?
Yes. So it's impressive.
Yeah, I mean, he's not 100%, but from where to say like I'm 2/3 better, that's quite a jump, and I think it's been what, 3-4 months maybe.
Yeah, I would say let's say 4 months, and a couple of things just context wise. So a condition that isn't supposed to be treatable, and that people only go one direction down. So to even be able to slow that process or stop it is impressive, but to reverse it, I mean, again, I've been doing macular degeneration for about 17 years. We've seen many, many, many miracle cases, but as I mentioned in the last podcast, about 85% efficacy in slowing, stopping, or reversing. But I always get excited when we have somebody's condition and it reverses. And your dad. Now, I don't know if we have the option here for me to do a screen share and pop a couple images up. This will be good for anybody who's watching the video. But if they're just catching an audio, we'll describe what's in there.
Yeah, Guy, I know I can. If you check out the bottom of your screen, it does say share. Yeah. I don't know if yours says that, but if I have to toggle something, I will. Otherwise, go for it.
Let's see what it's going to let me do here. So, yeah, great.
And I'll just say, as Guy's throwing some stuff on the screen, you know, my dad, it's always funny, right? And this is very typical anytime I've been in the holistic health as a practitioner and a quote-unquote healer or just someone who helps people get better. And anytime you ask clients or patients, hey, how you doing? How's things going? And they're like, it's just okay. And you're like, well, tell me, like, fill me in, like, what's going on? And then they're like, oh, like, I'm 80% better, but I'm not 100%. So they kind of get down on themselves, but you're like, wait a second, back it up. You're 80% better. You didn't tell me that. Let's go there. And I think that was kind of my dad's response the other day. Very happy, but like the way he said it so nonchalantly, like, yeah, like things are getting better. I'm like, how much better? 2/3. Like, whoa. Like, yeah. I mean, as a practitioner, I'm like, I'm very happy with those results. So,
yeah. You know. Yes, exactly that. They kind of the soft sell, the undersell, right? So what we're looking at here on the screen, so I'm hoping you can see these two images here. So we're looking at Amsler grids. These are standard kind of at-home testing for folks with macular degeneration, other degenerative eye conditions. So what your dad has done here is he's kind of marked off this initial kind of with it at the beginning of week one, where he could see, and then all of the area that he couldn't see. So you can see he's very limited in terms of where vision is. And then we go just 1 week later, and you can see how much more. That's about a 30% improvement in one week. So that is impressive. He's going to do another one here so we have a comparison to be able to see how he's doing on the Amsler grid.
Yeah.
But again, just right off the bat, we started to see positive change. And, you know, that's always helpful, I think, for the client, that they get change right out of the gate. It's motivation. And so, you know, your dad had that. He really leaned in. And now, you know, we're checking in with him at 4 months, and he's saying he's a little, you know, kind of between 60-70% improvement. But he had that, you know, probably at the end of, you know, month two. So rapid improvement. And then he's headed back in for a check with his ophthalmologist. And so we'll get a more detailed report here on what has changed there and be able to add that into the mix. But so really impressive results. And, you know, again, a bit of a statistical outlier, but in keeping with what we see when people do this. I mean, I've got another client who's been on about as long as your dad. But she has had virtually no vision for 30 years. Right? So we're working with it. It's not technically macular degeneration. It's a condition very much like it, just more severe. And she goes in historically has gone in every 6 weeks for shots in her eyes, and every time she's worse. And it's been that way, you know, for decades. Just always worse, 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 worse. So since she started, it's the first time where she's gone in and not been worse, but actually been slightly better. Now, in her case, it's slightly better. We're getting small incremental positive changes, and she's starting now to notice it in her vision. So she's noticing it, not just measuring it at the ophthalmologist office, but she's experiencing it. But they're being able to stretch out the time between her shots. So that's always a good sign when we can have people having to get fewer needles stuck in their eye. That's an upside. And at the very least, we seem to have her plateaued. So she's in the stop category with a small improvement. So, you know, maybe we get her in a meaningful way into the reversing side. But right now, happily put her, and she's happy to be able to go in and just not get bad news every visit. Yeah. So again, it's such a potent intervention. I would love to see more people treating their macular degeneration, their retinitis pigmentosa, their Stargardt's, glaucoma, with a treatment that is, you know, there's no negative side effects, there's no downside. You do it at home. It's not very expensive. It's $75 a week if you're renting the device, so it's not onerous in terms of cost. Compare that to what the injections cost, $1,200. Well,
compare that to you go see a practitioner for one time a week.
Yeah.
I mean, for an hour, I mean, yeah. $75 for to see a high-level practitioner an hour, you're not even going to pay that. So, right. Like, if you had to go see someone, but with the device, you get to use it every single day.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And that's the big payoff of doing this at-home treatment. So we just have a very safe, simple, effective treatment for eye health. And, you know, I'd just love to see more people doing it. I mean, there's just such a potent opportunity there. So I appreciate your dad and his willingness to try something crazy, you know, that his son suggested, and then he's just leaning in.
Yeah, he really did go all in. And a couple of things I want to say for people that don't know my dad, and you might be thinking like, oh yeah, well that's great for you and your dad, Joel. Like, just be very clear, like, and I'm going to kind of unveil the kimono, if you will, but my dad is, he's overweight. And his health is not like the best in that sense. Like, I think he could be taking care of himself better.
Sure.
And I bet he could even, if he was metabolically doing things to improve his weight loss and do other things, he would probably even get better results, is my guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. But he hasn't done anything radical, guys. If you're listening, he's done whatever guy told him. He took the herbs. He's doing certain things. He's using microcurrent regularly and using red light. And so that's what he's been doing. And the other thing what he told me is, he said, I really enjoy Guy because I was afraid Guy might tell me, like, you know, don't stop going and taking the shots, right? Like the Western approach, which, by the way, I'm so anti-Western, I would probably say that. But he really appreciated that you met him in the middle. You're like, yeah, I mean, you could do both. And I saw anybody's kind of listening and they're in that space, like, he really appreciated that you saw both both aspects of it and said, like, if it's totally up to you, you can totally keep doing that. So he enjoyed that.
Yeah, he's been a delight to work with. And so how are things going for you at home?
So, you know, one of the things we talked about last time, and Guy, before we jump in any further, we're going to get into devices. I know we want to talk about HRV and some of the other cool things that you're working on. For people that missed the first episode, how would you describe the kind of practitioner you are? I know you have a huge background in naturopathic, but you've really kind of diverted and specialized. Yes, you still have that methodology, but you've really diverted into what I know you would call like electric, like brains. You have your own term beyond neurofeedback, and you use all types of devices and red light and photobiomodulation to really get people better because you're just seeing the results are faster.
Yes, we call it, the area is called bioelectric medicine. That it's been around for centuries. It is not new by any means. All technology, the technology iterates and gets better, more sophisticated, smaller, cheaper, more functional. But we can go back to Greek times when they were literally using electric eels to treat people with electricity. I mean, this is ancient theory and technology. Can you imagine if I was like, okay, you're going to rent an eel for $75 a week, I'm going to send it in the mail. but that was the old way of doing it. So now we have, you know, great technology that has made the in-home treatment very possible. But yeah, so bioelectric medicine, my background is kind of, you know, on the orthopedic side, dealing with injuries and pain in the body. What I did was called integrated manual therapies. That was my main practice. But I also ran a large integrative medicine clinic. So we had one of the biggest integrative medicine clinics in the country. So I got exposed to all kinds of different healthcare happening within the clinic. And we spent, as a team, a lot of time doing case conferences. So we'd meet every week and we might have 6 or 26 providers in the meeting, and we would do case conferences, and we would hear from the MD and the chiropractor and the acupuncturist and the Reiki provider on, you know, how they were treating this patient, like one patient, how were each of these professions interacting, and what was this integrative treatment plan? So I learned a ton about the efficacy of these different modalities on, you know, standard conditions that we see, you know, depression, fibromyalgia, you name it. And so that was just a broad background of understanding that I bring to my clients. But my specialty in the last 12 years has been bioelectric medicine. So that's using a device, whatever it is, to affect the electrical gradient at the cellular level. So whether we're using electricity, pulse magnetic, light, whatever the application is, we're using an electrical intervention to affect the electric gradient at the level of the cell. And we can kind of compare that to what pharmaceutical medicine does. Pharmaceutical medicine is trying to change the chemical gradient at the level of the cell. And I have no complaint about what they're up to. I mean, have many complaints. But having just been through my own medical ordeal, I needed Western medicine because I had an acute medical issue. Everybody in the chain was fantastic. I ended up, you know, I took more meds in 1 month than my entire life scraped together in one pile, but I needed them. You know, I tried to be my, you know, natural holistic self, and it's like, oh, I'm not going to take that, or I'm supposed to take 4, I'm going to take 1. And I very quickly learned that that was a bad idea. And so I just took the medicines as prescribed, and life went better when I did. So I'm not anti really anything if it's well thought through, appropriate for the condition, and the side effects are less than the benefit, and it's short term, all of those things in. So anyways, to say the pharmaceutical medicine and even nutrition is largely working on the chemical side. So we have a mindset that is very much about the mechanics of the body. And we don't have much of a mindset in our Western approach to health, whether it's allopathic medicine or really anybody who's kind of coming from a Western mindset has this more mechanical approach. push the parts around, make the parts do what you want to do, and you use a physical input to do that. It's the Eastern traditions that have more of a idea of interacting with the information system. So how do you affect the intelligence of the body? And that's where bioelectric medicine is exploding right now, is in a Western paradigm, we're beginning to figure out how to interact with the body in the sense of information flow, information processing, and affect the information side of it. And that's where bioelectric medicine comes in. It gives us an opportunity to interact with the software and the hardware, but the novel piece is being able to interact with the software of the body. And so that's what we do. We use devices to interact with the hardware and the software of the body to get optimal health outcomes.
Yeah, so critical. And you know, I have a background in electric stimulation using the new Fit device, also known as a newbie. And it's a DC current. And so the body is DC. It's a direct current. A lot of people don't know this. Mm-hmm. Like you mentioned, everybody thinks that the body is based on chemical reactions, and there's some truth to that. We're also fascinated by the microbiome, so we heavily talk about that. But there's not a lot of people screaming and saying, hey, don't forget about the electrical system of the body. Right. And if anybody's ever curious of what we're talking about, there's a great book called The Body Electric. This is a classic book by Robert Abecker. I could read this book every year and learn something new. I mean, he was ahead of his time probably, and he talks about how salamanders grew back their tails, and he kind of figured out, whoa, there's an electricity, there's an electric effect, and we know that when bone regrows, there's an electric effect, and so we see that. So there's no denying the electricity, and I've had tons of great results with my new fit. I mean, listen, I personally haven't done it, but there's testimonies of people that were paralyzed that have walked again using this electric kind of current, this direct current and kind of therapy. So the thing that you're talking about, I understand well, but just to give people an idea, like what Guy does and some of the work he's doing is honestly magical. I mean, it's some really cool stuff.
It does seem that way. I mean, we call them everyday miracles because it defies what we think is possible. But what we think is possible has been heavily constrained by a limited perspective of what health is and how the body functions. And it turns out if you step outside that paradigm, you can have these things on a regular basis that are called miracles because they defy the paradigm. But they're actually not, right? And you mentioned the salamander and Becker. That's great. You know, my favorite guy, Michael Levin, you know, he's picked up on Becker's work, but he's brought to fruition what Becker was trying to do. But Michael Levin, you know, so we talk about the salamander, salamanders regenerate, and Becker was really kind of primarily working in that model, but his goal was how to get a non-regenerating reptile to regenerate. How could he get, say, a frog? So Michael Levin has now done that at scale, shown that he can get a frog to regenerate. And then not only get a frog to regenerate a leg, you amputate, it grows back, but to get that frog to grow a fifth leg, right? So not just regenerate the anatomy that came kind of in the supposed kind of DNA instructions, but to say to the DNA, I know you know how to make a leg. I want you to turn on the grow a leg here algorithm and grow a leg here. And then they do. And the leg is wired in, functional. The frog can use it. I mean, it's just like it was part of its nature from day one. And so that level of control and specificity within bioelectric medicine, I mean, that's what's taking this field from kind of a back bench, like, isn't that cute, these people over there playing with their stuff, to rivaling all of the paradigms of biology, psychology, sociology, philosophy, because of what his research has shown the ability to do. Truly amazing. So, a lot of potency in bioelectric medicine that we're just beginning to understand and tap into.
Yeah, really neat. And last thing I want to do before I jump into some of my experience with the devices that you recommended for me and my family, is who comes and sees you mostly, in your opinion? Like, what are the ailments? What are the things that, is it fibromyalgia? We know macular degeneration. We talked about that. But what else? Concussions, TBI. Who are coming to see you, and what are the results that you're typically getting?
Sure. So I'll kind of make a distinction between my kind of brick and mortar clinic, where people are coming in physically, so into the clinic, and then our virtual clinic. So there's certain conditions that will respond well to at-home treatment. And so we tend to see those people, you know, we treat them virtually at home. And then there are conditions that really do better with in clinic because of the nature of the devices that we can deploy. They're more sophisticated. So we kind of divide our patient population into who needs in clinic and who can be done at home. So I would say at the virtual, the biggest by far population is dementia. And so I have, you know, I don't know, 80 plus clients that are in the dementia space. And then from there, you know, probably the next is something like anxiety. And then,
well, guy, dementia, Parkinson's. That's a great niche that you carved out, because they don't even know if they're getting better. They can't remember, right?
Well, when they start, yes.
Just kidding.
But no, it's so I appreciate you caught on right away to the challenge. There is a way in which, you know, we can laugh at ourselves.
But I'm imagining it. Someone with dementia, they obviously have like a family member who's reaching out to come to bring you, because a person that has dementia doesn't even know to reach out to you. Let's face it. So.
Yeah. And that's certainly when they get into a little bit of the later stages. So when they're past the early signs of, I think I might have, and they're into it, which is the majority of people, because most people spend a good chunk of time in denial. And if they sought treatment when they first suspected they had symptoms, outcomes would be a lot better. It's a lot harder to take somebody who's 10 years into dementia and reverse that, because so much damage has been done and the disease process has spread to so much of the brain. It just takes a lot of effort, a lot of resources to push back against that degeneration and allow time for the regeneration that is going to come into place once you've pushed the degenerative forces, you know, out of the area. So it's just more difficult. But it is, to your point, it is the challenge of working with a person, and this is really about the person with dementia, is asking them, inviting them to make decisions where they need access to their executive functions, the thing they are losing access to. And so, you know, having that conversation where people are have the task of having to make difficult decisions in terms of the expense, right? It's about a $4,500 expense. So that's some money. And then the protocols can be complicated, but you have to have this conversation for the person to be able to say yes. And then even if there's a spouse involved or a child, that spouse or child is still also going to want to recruit their loved one into the process so that that person is participating. And it's challenging. And I will say it's hard when you know somebody is refusing care because they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody wants to force somebody to have care. So often what happens is that person goes without care, even though their condition is treatable, possibly reversible. They could get back to a place where they would then say, absolutely, I want to do this. I love this. Thank you for doing this. In this country, nobody is going to force somebody to have a healthcare treatment. So it is hard on the heart to have these conversations with family when you need the person's kind of permission and buy-in, but they're not at a place where they're capable of doing the calculus of that. So, you nailed it right out of the gate. That is the challenge of that population. Less so in TBI, unless somebody's, you know, really severe traumatic brain injury. But in dementia, it's common really early on, and it's just something we need to navigate in the process of it. But there's another area where, you know, we have people who were non-functioning that are now living a normal life. You know, they're driving, golfing, going, hanging out with friends. They're living their life.
You're talking about TBI or you're talking about dementia?
Dementia. Yeah.
Wow.
People with dementia who could do nothing but sit in a chair all day and now are just living a normal life. And, you know, those are
the, how quickly are you seeing the results and the dementia? I mean, obviously it's, there's a bio individuality, but, 100%. Yep. Like how quickly have you seen, and I'm thinking of what you just said, by the way.
Yep.
Someone has dementia, they're sitting in a chair, they can't move, and then boom, how quickly? 3 months, they're out of a chair?
Yeah, I mean, so there's a couple, because we do a couple of approaches, so we'll do the red light, which has the near infrared light, which has a longer timeline to efficacy because we're working with physiology. So we're trying to reverse neuroinflammation and vascular damage. And so it just takes time. But we pair that with the audiovisual entrainment device, and that starts working within minutes. And so we can see positive change in a week. You know, families will report back and say, you know, my wife or my husband, you know, we had a conversation today. We haven't been able to have a conversation in 6 months or 6 years. And we actually had a conversation today.
Hold on, Guy. You know, I do a lot of men's work and men's coaching for my men. They don't know how to, they don't have dementia, but they don't know how to communicate. Maybe I need to start using some visual entrainment to get them to have conversations. I never thought about this. Holy cow.
For different reasons, but yes. We'll circle back to the tangent, but to say,
yeah.
So in our clinic, we have a great opportunity to be working with first responders. So there's this kind of state's promoted first responders and trauma program that the state is just a few years into, and we've gotten involved. And so we've been able to take kind of, you know, these first responders, a lot of them men, but isn't necessarily about men, but, you know, it's common where going someplace and talking to somebody about their feelings is not high on the list, right?
And Guy, you know me, former first responder, 15 years, Oakland and San Francisco, worked in some of the toughest neighborhoods, was in a shooting. I mean, I have a lot of, you know, trauma and a lot of detachment where it took me a long time to get over these emotional hurdles. So I know exactly. Yeah,
exactly.
The population of guys I'm around, we see a lot of that. So this, you're speaking our language for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, these were your brothers and this was a group of people who are not going to self-select in large numbers to go talk to somebody about their feelings, right? It's not going to happen. So what we've been able to offer is then devices. So there isn't the need to do the talk therapy, but what we found, and this is again, right to the point you were making, is as their nervous systems start to regulate, they then can and want to talk and emote and cry and really do the things needed to heal that trauma as opposed to just manage it and cope and that. And so we've found the devices have been extraordinarily helpful in that sense of bridging that gap of regulating the nervous system, creating a sense of kind of safety in the system. And then we find that they just want to be like people, that they want to heal, they want to be better. They have stuff on the inside that really needs to be, you know, expelled, and then talk therapy becomes. So yeah, so we literally have somebody with an audiovisual entrainment device on while in therapy. And so they're doing talk therapy with the device on. So we're regulating their nervous system externally while they're trying to regulate their nervous system internally. So we get this kind of synergistic effect. Yeah. So
absolutely. And are they typically an alpha or do you go alpha theta for these guys to get them into that state? And just in general, I'm just wondering.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, you're right on. If you can safely get a person into alpha theta, that's a sweet spot for doing that type of work, but not everybody is going to be able to tolerate going there right away. So you might actually need to take them, you know, you might do something like a gamma, right? So gamma is a meta-organizing brainwave, and it's so in that it's a meta-organizing brainwave and organizes all of the brainwaves underneath it. So all the betas, the alphas, the thetas, the deltas. it's associated with, you know, kind of, you know, meditative states, states of equanimity and that. But the state of equanimity comes from having an organized nervous system, right? So gamma doesn't give you equanimity. It doesn't give you access into an altered state of equanimity. It organizes your system so that you can have the experience of an organized system, which we call equanimity, or, you know,
balance, yeah, equilibrium, yeah.
And so for folks like that, we might say we go with a gamma and just kind of organize the whole system a little bit, give them access to more of their resources. So it really, you know, depends on the person, their inner resources, the nervous system, what it's on board for, what it's not. And you know, just kind of try and intelligently navigate that system where it is in its trajectory of healing.
Wow, that's amazing. And, you know, you and I were talking offline before this, before we jumped on, and I was telling you of all the amazing results that I've been seeing with some of my clients and just in my personal life using gamma brainwave of that frequency, using a device that you recommended, and you were able to get me a better deal. So go see Guy if you want the David Delight Pro. This is the audiovisual entrainment device I'm using, and I use it pretty regularly with my morning meditations, and I love it because I will say I like it a little bit more than BrainTap. No offense, I do like the BrainTap still, but I've been enjoying it more, and I feel like what it does is, you can explain it better, but it flickers lights into my eyes, and that, in sense, it trains my brain, and it gets me into this entrainment, and it gets me into a state, if you will. And alpha being like a relaxed meditative state. Theta is like where you start to manifest and you can kind of reprogram the subconscious. And gamma, from what I understand from reading Joe Dispenza's work and Lynn Mataggart, who wrote The Intention Experiment, you enter this super conscious state. You can also, your immune system gets usually better. It'll create cytokines like white blood cells to help fight off infections. And I've just felt better entrainment with the David Delight personally. But gamma wave specifically, I was telling you, I used it on my wife when she was really run down, was sick. We had family coming into town. And within a 40-minute treatment using the gamma brainwave frequency, she popped out. I've never seen this happen. She popped up out of it. And she was like, I feel great. Like, let's go. I was getting ready to cancel the plans for the day. And I was the first time I've seen her like that quickly turn it around. And I have to imagine it was that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a great little device. Some of the differentiating factors, if we just talk photic entrainment, what I like about the David Delight is it has the ability to work the left and right visual field separately. So you're not getting the same pulse wave in both hemispheres. You can change how you're driving the right hemisphere and how you're driving the left hemisphere. And that can become helpful for, you know, it's just another tool in the toolbox. And the main difference is it also has transcranial stimulation. And so you get these three modalities, the visual entrainment, the auditory entrainment, but then you get the electrical entrainment. And then, you know, I offer people, you know, kind of my biohackers upgrade kit, where you can do vagus nerve stimulation, right? So you can use it to balance the autonomic nervous system through electrical stimulation. But we can also move the electrodes off the ears, which is the standard treatment, up onto the head and do more of a true transcranial stimulation. So we could, if you're, say you're doing a focus and concentration, you could take, and I've just got a couple of the electrodes here, you could take these two sponge electrodes, which can be attached to the audiovisual entrainment. And I have a headband that I send people, and you can put them here on the frontal lobes. So while you're wanting to increase frontal lobe activity through doing a protocol for focus and concentration with the light, we're putting the stimulation going right into that area. And then conversely, if it's working, say, in my dementia group, or anybody who wants to improve memory, we might go behind the ears with a theta protocol to target the hippocampus and increase hippocampal theta, which turns out to be very important in memory encoding and memory retrieval. So we can take this simple device and we can actually expand it to get closer to what we do in clinic with much more sophisticated equipment, but a person can do that at home. So that's why I go with the David Delight Pro, is you just have more tools in that toolbox than BrainTap. But again, BrainTap does a fine job for what they do, but as a clinical tool, this one is better.
Yeah, I agree. There's just far more options, and I think they're priced pretty similarly. So
yeah,
I'm not here. Get whatever you want, but I have both. So like I said, I mean, right now I've seen a lot better results for me. And again, like you said, there's all these protocols, and I've been able to access some of your resources and working with you hand in hand. And I know I need to lean on that more because I have a problem asking for help. So and that is something I'm sure I want to actually review with you in the future, because I think there's some cool things I could do with my kids, and I haven't been super successful in getting them to use it. And that was actually the reason I reached out to you first too, was, hey, is there ways, because one of my sons got a TBI or a concussion, and I've just noticed anger issues and things like that. And you said, yeah, absolutely, we can work with the David Delight and some red light therapy. And there's some transcranial things, a little bit difficult to do with kids. And my kids are biohackers, and they do kind of come along for the ride with me and will acquiesce to some of my suggestions. But sometimes, you know, when they're doing schoolwork and having those things on them, it's just cumbersome. So I know we have to kind of start slow and kind of build them up. But that is something you do. And that's, so if anyone's listening, that you work with kids a lot and have a lot of good successes from what I understand as well, right?
Yep. We do. And we've been involved with schools here in the Minneapolis and the larger Minnesota area for quite some time, you know, getting devices in schools so that whether it's the counseling staff or teachers can use those devices maybe in the classroom with a child who's struggling either academically or, you know, just kind of emotionally having a hard time settling. Or we have special ed classes where they'll have an audiovisual entrainment for each student in the class, and that the kids are all have their on while they're doing their schoolwork. So, you know, we're seeing, and again, just remarkable results in terms of the school experience. The kids are better regulated, which means teachers are less stressed, but their classmates also are less distracted by the students who tend to be, you know, a little more dysregulated in class and kind of a distraction. So as you kind of bring all that down, the educational experience goes up. So we see, you know, the number of missed classes goes down, the overall academic achievement goes up. The subjective report of the students of how they feel about going to school improves. The report of teachers, their subjective report of how they're enjoying their job goes up. So we just see across the board, as people are more well-regulated, things go better. It makes perfect sense, right? But being able to get it to happen, you know, in say a school situation has been challenging. So that's in school. But then also, you know, we've developed a number of programs where we can use federal funds or state funds or county funds to get these devices paid for. And so that's helping families that maybe otherwise couldn't afford a $600 expense be able to get one and then help their child at home. And again, helps their child. For kids, most of the time, it's a self-regulation issue. Sometimes it's truly, you know, more of a cognitive issue where we have some cognitive deficit, we have a developmental delay, we have an auditory processing issue. Absolutely, that happens. But the majority is just self-regulation, it's behavior. And so if we can help that child regulate their nervous system, and then that nervous system is more able to do their homework, but also more able to show up and be present in the classroom, and that just helps them across the board, academically, socially, in all ways, self-esteem, everything. So it's been a remarkable program. But the biggest challenge is kind of what you mentioned. How do you get children of the appropriate age to do these things, right? They're weird. They're just, you know, I had a mom just the other day just telling me, it's like my son tried it, and the first thing he said is, this is weird, I don't want to do it. You know, I was like, yeah, like, okay. It can go that way. I mean, we have other ones where the kids just love it, especially boys, because boys tend to like technology. Yeah. And so you may have the adopter, you know, who is just like, this is really cool. They feel special. It feels like kind of sci-fi. But we have a large collection of kids who's like, I don't want to. And not surprising, again, in the more dysregulated the nervous system, the less likely that nervous system can do something that's good for it, right? That like the resources aren't there to make good choices. And that's our challenge. So, you know, what I've done or do with parents and what we've done over the years is come up with, you know, it's kind of a list of what are the strategies. And I'd say the number one strategy, you know, most households these days, there's some negotiation between, you know, parents and children around time on a device. Right? And whether that device is a TV, a laptop, an iPad, a phone, you know, whatever the device is, generally the child wants time on the device. And so, you know, what we do is like, we'll say, well, negotiate for time. And maybe that's like, yes, you can watch, you know, a 30-minute show, but you have to wear your see-through glasses and do your AVE session while you're watching the show, right?
I was just going to say, Guy, my kids don't watch a lot of TV and stuff, but when they do, they're in a trance. And they would totally put on the glasses. I know they would to earn some, like, you know, YouTube watching something kind of time. So that's a perfect example. Doing schoolwork, they're already not too pumped about it. So that's probably a bad time to anchor it. Yep. But doing something like TV would work out just fine.
Yep, absolutely. And so it's really finding what is the currency for that child. Like I had another family where their child wanted screen time. So he was willing to do it for that. But their sense was the trade-off wasn't a net positive. The unwanted behavior that the increased screen time brought about outweighed the positive benefit. So what they did was they went to, you know, just like a straight, we're going to pay you. So, you know, they was like, you're going to get $1 for every 15 minutes that you wear this thing. And, you know, like, we're not going to give you that dollar, but we're going to put it here. It's right here for you. And when you want to buy yourself something, you want to buy yourself a new game, you want to buy, you know, whatever, that money is here and it's yours to spend. Right? And that for that child, that was amazing, right? Like for him, he would come into the clinic because he was also doing in clinic and he would tell me, you know, he was proud. It's like, I made $5 this week. You know, it's like, great. So it's really just getting to understand the currency of the child and then how do you do that? And then what we find is that doesn't necessarily have to be a long-term strategy. Hopefully what can happen, and again, this is all percentages, but hopefully what can happen is as that child uses the device, they become more well-regulated. They see positive changes in what's happening with them. School is easier. Things are better with their friends. They're enjoying life more, they're sleeping better, whatever those things are, it registers, whether it's explicitly or not, that life is getting better. That can transition into just a sense of wanting to use the technology, like just an affinity for it, like, oh, this thing helps me. And then the need to bribe them can kind of back off, or it can, you know, it can, maybe it was a really high cost, you know, what the payoff was, but you can lower that to something that isn't, you know, and when I say high cost, I don't necessarily mean money. I mean, like the child who watching TV was more dysregulating than using the device. So you might have what you're asking the child to do. Maybe it's like you get a dish of ice cream, you know, before bed, but you're like, look, ice cream. I don't want to be giving my child ice cream every night to get him to do this. It's not good for them. I'm causing a nutritional issue while I'm trying to fix a brain issue. Great. So then maybe you get to, you know, after a couple of weeks, you get to back off that and you get to offer a lower, you know, reward prize because now they're bought into it. So there's just, you know, it's a process, unfortunately. And not for everybody. I have had households, you know, a mom with four special needs kids, she was coming in to treat herself just because of her stress level. So she's coming in for treatment, get her on an audiovisual entrainment device. her special needs children see mom wearing this device. So then, you know, one of the daughters wants to use it. And mom notices, like, wow, she's doing better with this device. Next thing, another daughter. So she ended up buying 4 audiovisual entrainment devices because she could never get time on one because her kids always had them, right? So yeah. those moments do happen where you just see adoption and it goes. But then there's ones where it you know, you need a strategy. So, yeah. I wholeheartedly support you in finding a strategy that can get more than none happening.
Yeah. I wanted to stress something that you talked about, which is the nervous system and getting the nervous system regulated. I think we probably talked about this on the first episode, and that is that we know as practitioners that nobody will heal unless their nervous system is in a parasympathetic state. Meaning, I can give you all the supplements and all of this and that, and you probably won't heal. You honestly won't, because your body's not in a relaxed state. The nervous system is the governing body of your being, and if it doesn't feel safe, it's not gonna work as well. And the interesting thing is that I've seen over and over again, and I actually had another guest on my podcast, we were talking about this, and he gets people better from autoimmune conditions, the C word, fibromyalgia, all these things. And what does he do? He balances the nervous system first, and then now their input is good. Now they're ready to receive healing input, whereas before they're just dysregulated. So the body is attacking itself. That's what an autoimmune disease. Your body can't differentiate between like what is safe and what's not. So it just attacks everything, including the good stuff. I also want to just say, I had a coach recently in the men's work world, and one of the things he was very big on was breath work. And I'm like, big deal. Like, why do I have to do all this breath work? And he's like, Joel, you don't understand. I got to bring your nervous system back down and regulate it. Because when your wife has like a mood or she just pisses you off, if your nervous system is already jacked up, you're going to respond in a way that's not right. But if I can get your nervous system down, those little things that come up, those moods or whatever that you don't like, you become more Teflon. You become more bulletproof. And you're like, that doesn't bother me anymore. So it's really interesting. And I want people to understand the power of the nervous system. And that's what you're talking about. We've got to get that nervous system balanced and in that equilibrium. And then we can get to work. So that the work that you're doing is so powerful. I know it, but I need other people to understand that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And as I kind of alluded to in the beginning of the podcast, we talk about this difference between kind of a more mechanical approach and then a more information-based approach. And the more we apply the information processing model to health and disease, the more conditions start to make sense. So you mentioned fibromyalgia. So fibromyalgia goes under the larger umbrella of central sensitization. Central sensitization is a model that developed, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago. The time gets a little fuzzy after a while. But so it was this kind of conception that came out of what clinicians were seeing in these multi-system disorders. And then it was still left as kind of a mechanical issue, right? Like you just have a complex machine and the parts are out of sync with one another. And if you could get it back in sync, and a good amount of, say, like the breath work model still has the kind of in sync side of it, like it's a machine. And I think there's still lots of value in that, but what I'm seeing more and more kind of in my own practice, and we're trying to deploy more in our clinic, and what I'm really paying attention to is this emerging information model, where we look at it as information processing and the intelligence of the system has lost the plot. Like one of my teachers years ago, this is what he used to say, like the system has lost the plot. And that turns out to be actually a really helpful metaphor, but also it turns out it's not a metaphor, like it's legitimately true. And so doing something like breath work, where we're trying to balance or rebalance the autonomic nervous system, so the sympathetic and the parasympathetic, there's a way in which we can look at that from a kind of a mechanical standpoint, right? Generally speaking, we need less sympathetic and more parasympathetic innervation. And if we can manipulate the autonomic nervous system to get that, we'll get our result. It can be worth a moment, right, to just, you know, kind of dip into some of the depth here. So what we have is, well, the brain in general kind of running to some degree or other, it's got its finger in the pie of everything that's happening in the body. And then similarly, the autonomic nervous system, and especially when we're talking about kind of from the neck down, running the physiology, so our organs. So if you think about it, is like if your autonomic nervous system is off a little bit, so communication, the whole communication system isn't running the way it's supposed to. And we could come up with 10,000 versions of how this could be off, but let's just kind of keep it relatively simple. We'll just kind of coarse grain it. If your liver isn't getting the proper information on how to be an optimal liver, so it isn't processing kind of when it should be, and it isn't processing as much as it should be, and it is letting through things that it shouldn't and taking out things that it shouldn't. So we have multiple levels of the liver just isn't doing its job. And let's just say like that's like 2% off. But then the same thing's happening in your kidney, and the same thing is happening in your gut, and then the same thing's happening in your spleen, and the same thing is happening in your endocrine organs. And so everything is just off because it's getting bad information, bad instructions. And you can imagine that 2% off across 18 systems in the body for 10 years. Well, essentially, that's aging and death. Right? That's what that is, right? And everybody has some slope that they're on in terms of how quickly is their system losing the plot, right? And that's going to equal the number of encounters with the healthcare system, the severity of the encounters with the healthcare system, how well you recover from those health encounters, and all of that knitted together equals longevity. And That's the key thing here is we often think about, well, when we think about health, we think about disease. And if a person isn't actively sick, they're like, I'm fine. But we don't have a good appreciation for optimal functioning, right? And because we don't think about it, we don't have a vocabulary for it, we don't have a body of experience for it, we're not good at gauging where are we in our vitality and resilience place over against where am I relative to something I think of as a disease. Right. So there's that whole paradigm. And if we had a thing like a car where you can plug it in and your mechanic can do an analysis and say, here's what's happening in your car. If the body had a port, you could plug it in and we could get a readout that told us what is our kind of our vitality number, our longevity score. We would take this more seriously, but you know, we have a little bit of this now, again, emerging in the bioelectric sphere. One of the things on our list to maybe get to today was the heart rate variability and looking at heart rate variability. That is one of the strongest metrics we have to measure what's called all-cause mortality. What is this system's ability to produce health? What is its rate of decline? That's what we can extract from HRV data is it's a measure, not necessarily the measure, but it's a measure. It's a window into this particular piece. And so, you know, the more we can get people kind of dialed into this idea of health versus disease and into ideas of they're not really about longevity. Like that, I kind of regret that word as taking over this field. I would say that longevity is the result, but what I like to think of is, you know, what we have in our clinic, I call it the More Life program. I named it that for a very specific reason. It's about depth more than it is about span, but it doesn't exclude span of life. Like I think living longer is great, but longer with poor quality life is not what anybody wants, right? It's like, oh, I want to live an extra 20 years with chronic disease, pain and suffering, and multiple medical interventions in those last 20 years. Like nobody's signing up for that. They want to you know, live from 80 to 100, but they want to live those 20 years like when they were 40, right? And so there's a longevity in that sense, kind of more life, so that span, but there's depth, there's quality of life, which is how interested in life are you? How engaged, how curious, how much energy do you have? How much vitality do you have? How much do you want to kind of get out and enjoy life? Or it might not be get out and enjoy. It might be at 70, you decide to go back to university and get that degree you never got, right? And you can and you do, right? So to me, that's the depth component. There's a depth of engagement with life that comes when you are well-resourced. And when you have that sense of vitality, life is rich. As that diminishes, life tends to get thinner and thinner and thinner because you just don't have the capacity to engage, right? And so the piece about, like you mentioned, breath work, right? So heart rate variability is, you know, a really important measure and tool that we can use in that regard.
Yeah, that's fascinating. There's so many things I want to go down the rabbit hole now, even more with you, with what you talked about. But you just mentioned them about longevity and just how I think we take all these micro cuts daily and we don't really think about it. And then we're like, oh, I have like a disease or whatever. And I was just thinking, one of the things I love to use and add into my just daily life and my family's life is we use a lot of essential oils from doTERRA. And I was at one of their recent conferences, and they just created kind of a sleep system protocol using three different oils and some different things using. And they said that the results they saw in this 6-week clinical study that they did was like longevity increased by like 3 to 7 years because they were actually shifting the epigenome and the circadian rhythms were shifting. And that would equate to 3 to 7 years. But in my head, I'm like, what are you talking about? How do you know that's going to increase 3 to 7 years? But to your point, like, if we can shift the nervous system and I'm doing all these things and I'm just thinking I'm hard charging on autopilot, I'm not even aware of it. Mm-hmm. I'm taking those micro cuts every day somewhere, mm-hmm. sleep, in like the organ not vibrating at the hertz that it's supposed to be. It was the example like you were using. And we just might be aware of it. And I just thought, man, those little subtle shifts, those little subtle inputs could make a big difference that we might not think of, which could be 3 to 7 years if we're looking at longevity. So really cool the way you talked about that. I know we have to wrap things up. One thing I did want to highlight, and I didn't get a chance to go back to, but I was just thinking what the power would be. You mentioned schools. And right now, you know, we are in a new pandemic, a new epidemic of people returning to schools. The kids, they're depressed, they're isolated. And I hear a lot of teachers complaining to me that these kids are just, they don't know how to communicate. They don't know how to act. They don't know how to engage. And I was thinking, wow, what a powerful tool we could use, a modality using something like some of the things you're talking about. If we could get that into schools, we could probably jumpstart things back in and getting that on-site learning a lot quicker and a lot better. I know we don't have time to talk about all this. I want to bring you back on because I do want to talk about HRV with you, and that's going to take an hour. So let's plan something soon. I want to have you back on. I got to run. I know you got to run, but let's definitely do that. I want to talk about HRV and maybe some of your ideas around schools and coming out of the pandemic because I think that could be very valuable.
Two great topics. Absolutely. I mean, you nailed it with what's happening in schools. Some of my least healthy clients are teachers. Mm-hmm. And the stories that I hear on a day-to-day basis of what's happening in just the average classroom, just, you know, not the worst classroom, just average middle America classrooms. It is. I mean, I like your word pandemic. It's a pandemic. So yes. Absolutely. Let's do this again.
Yeah, absolutely. We're definitely going to do it again. Guy, talk to everybody. Let them know where they can follow you on social, where they can connect with you if they want to just learn about some of this bioelectric medicine and just all the things that you guys are doing in Minnesota and then virtually. Like, you're helping my dad. He's in Idaho here. So
cerebralfit.com. So cerebralfit.com. That's the best place to track me down. There you'll find my direct phone number, a direct email. There's a link all over the website where you can schedule a free 15-minute consult. Or if you want to go into more detail, there's a longer consult. But CerebralFit.com, easiest place to find me.
Amazing. Guy Odishaw, back for round two, soon to be round three. Thanks again, for coming on the show. I appreciate you so much.
Thanks, Joel. It's been fun.